The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 14th of November, 2018. On the podcast today, Roger Murphy, Chief Executive Officer of African Battery Metals, ABM, sticker there. And Roger provides an update on its exploration activities in Cameroon and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Also on the podcast, I talk to full-time private investor Wheelie Dealer, and we talk about strategies, the market, and we mentioned a couple of stocks as well, including Vodafone and UtilityWise. Plus, I also have two lists, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. And you can see both these lists, top 10 versions, at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Roger Murphy, Chief Executive Officer of African Battery Metals. ABM is the ticker there. Roger, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Good to talk.
Yeah, you've done an exploration update, and we'll get into that in a bit and see what you've been up to since we last spoke. Before we do that, Roger, for people you're not familiar with the company, tell us all about what you're doing there, please.
Well, African Battery Metals tells you we are exploring for battery metals in Africa. We're particularly focused on cobalt and nickel, which are two of the metals that absolutely essential components of the batteries, which store the charge, which drives the electric vehicle revolution.
Excellent stuff. So you've provided an update on your exploration activities in Cameroon and the Democratic Republic of Congo. So take us through this, the highlights. What's happening here, Roger?
Well, on Cameroon first, just to remind people, this was one of the assets that we acquired in the significant deal we did late in the summer. We've been on the ground, and we've also collected some quite important geophysical data. Our licenses are in part contiguous with what we believe is the largest cobalt resource on the planet outside the DRC. It's the Geovic project, which currently ownership of which is unclear, and that's of interest to us as well, but it's 300 odd million tons at 0.2 cobalt and 0.6 nickel with manganese as well. So it's a very attractive project, and we have licenses in part contiguous and also very close to this resource. We think we understand from the geophysical work we've done why the Geovic resource is where it is. It's a combination, we think, of high magnetic intensity and high topography. And what we're saying in this release is we have areas which are the same on our license. So, we think we have got, we have high conviction targets, which we intend to follow up by getting on the ground and doing some work to try to prove that the geophysics, which we believe is leading us to the cobalt nickel mineralization, we would like to ground truth that.
Yeah, so when you say that we believe it's owned by Geovic Mining Corporation, so is it not clear who it's owned by?
Well, it is unclear. I mean, in the press release, we go into detail of the history of Geovic. They spent a lot of money. As I say, they had a 43-101 compliant resource of 300-odd million tons just on two of the seven licenses, so it's a big area. But, Geovic went into liquidation and was delisted from the TSX when cobalt fell in the last cycle from about $50 to about $10 a pound and was unable to raise the money. So, there's been nothing to say that they don't have the license, but there have been lots of rumors to say that many other groups, are interested in it. And of course, with the deep-pocketed backers we have, we would be one of those groups that's interested.
Yeah, it's amazing how cycles change, isn't it? If they'd just be able to held on for a couple more years, because like you say, things go in and out of favor. And cobalt, back when that happened, I assume, wasn't seen as one of the essential batteries to power the EV revolution,
Well, exactly. I mean, cobalt price was back in about 08, $50 a pound or over $100,000 a ton. But then, by 2012, it was back at $10 a pound or $20,000 a ton, and at that price, new big projects didn't make sense, and that's why Geovic went into liquidation and was delisted from the TSX.
Yeah, and what about DRC there?
Yeah, DRC is, you know, a different story. We have been disappointed. We've been delayed for a long time in these assay results. There's been, you know, some changes to the mining code in the DRC, which has placed additional administrative burdens, and that's delayed the assays, so I apologize for that. But they are disappointing. There's not much in the way of encouragement there. It's a big license. You know, these are soil samples from a couple of auger holes we've put in. It doesn't invalidate the license as a target. It's, you know, it's over 50 square kilometers and 7 or 8 kilometers long, but these results don't give us any encouragement. And, you know, we have to assess where we go in the DRC in the context of, you know, the opportunities that we have in Cameroon with this release, and also in Ivory Coast, where a month ago we had you know, updated the market on the high grade, you know, 0.2% cobalt in soils that we had there.
Yeah. Okay. So what's next then, Roger?
I think that, you know, it's ground follow-up. It's, well, in the Ivory Coast, it's we're looking at extending the soil anomaly. We, you know, the license continues and the soil anomaly continues to the south, so it could be bigger, and we'll be following up on that. And then in Cameroon, with some very high conviction targets and, you know, proof of very significant high-quality cobalt near our licenses, we'll need to get on the ground and start putting some auger holes or digging some pits. The mineralization is typically, you know, in Cameroon very shallow, 5 to 20 meters, but it's not at surface, so we've got to find a way, you know, to get down 5 to 20 meters. That's not a great depth, but it is a remote area, so we'll have to get on the ground in Cameroon and try and prove that the mineralization is there on our licenses.
Yeah, yeah. And what's the macro feel at the moment? I mean, there's obviously, you know, one of the biggest consumers of these commodities is China, and they're in a sort of tussle with trade and tariffs with Trump. I mean, is everyone still as bullish on cobalt and nickel and all this stuff?
I think longer term, yes. I was at a dinner last night, a consultancy dinner with a number of other people, and, you know, the numbers drive the bullishness further out. I think short term, we haven't really seen the volume drive in electric vehicles yet, which is driving the demand side. But people are really worried about where the supply is coming from. So I think short term, maybe a little bit of constipation with a bit of excess metal around. But I think that clears into next year, and people begin to get concerned about where the metal, cobalt in particular, with 2/3 of current supply from the DRC, with all the problems that that brings, you know, where the new metal is going to come from. And, you know, big resources like there is in Cameroon and opportunities elsewhere in nickel, cobalt, laterites, you know, are going to see attention again.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Roger, one final thing. If someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing, the areas you're exploring, but are not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
The opportunities in battery metals that we present for investors, not just in the DRC, but in other geographies, there's going to be increasing desire to find cobalt and nickel from cobalt, particularly from other countries in the DRC. And we have two interesting projects. We have some very deep-pocketed and well-resourced backers in Steve Dattels and others who have made money in other assets and other companies for investors before. And, you know, finally, you know, our share price and our market cap is very low, so I don't think there's much up, you know, downside in our company at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to do that last point again?
Yeah, it was a bit of a stutter, was it? And thirdly, I think, you know, with our current market cap, we're at a very low price, and there's no optimism in our share price. And, you know, I think there is a lot of reasons for optimism. We have cobalt nickel mineralization in two countries demonstrated at the market now.
Excellent stuff, Roger. Thanks for that. And hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is full-time private investor Willy Dealer. You all right, fella?
Yeah, not bad, Justin. How are you?
Well, if I judge my mood on the colour of my portfolio, I'd say I'm an angry red. I did tweet out earlier. I mean, I hold more sort of small or micro caps than you do. It's, you know, there's a couple of days in October, more than a couple actually, but where literally it just looked dreadful. At the moment, my only riser is BT. and that's at 1.43%. Everything else, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 of my stocks are down, one up. So it's not, incredible. You know, you did ask.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, I say on my portfolio, it's, you know, the only slight difference to what we had in October is there are still a few blue things around, and I'm not seeing quite the size of falls that we were getting back in October. You know, that's the only sort of like glimmer of hope I can see. I mean, it's just why would you be buying at the moment? That's the thing that gets me. There's obviously so much uncertainty around the Brexit thing. Has just become such a fiasco. Mm-hmm. The American markets look incredibly weak. I mean, I think a lot of that is being driven by the Nasdaq that had obviously run up to pretty steep valuations, and that seems to be coming off a lot. I mean, I've actually put some shorts on the S&P 500 in the last few days to try and hedge a bit, you know. But I just, yeah, it all just looks pretty weak, doesn't it? And with the Brexit thing just grinding on, and you sort of think, well, when's it ever going to end, you know? And
yeah. But you know what? Last night I watched that incredible sort of footage that's been compiled by Peter Jackson, you know, They Shall Not Die Young, or We Shall Not Forget Them.
But
amazing. I advise anyone to watch it, because it's real footage from World War I, colourised and narrated by the guys that were there. And you couldn't get a much more of a hellhole to exist in. Yeah. These guys went through it with almost, you know, let's get the job done. I mean, people, you know, brains being blown out either side of them, just carrying on, and in awful conditions, beyond awful, you know, with bugs and rats and mud. And that went on for like 4 years. And I'm just thinking, I know there's no comparison, but Brexit seemed to be, you know, with me for my entire lifetime. And I'm thinking, wow. And yeah, it is dragging on. And I'm thinking most people now will think, let's just get some kind of deal done. Just get out of the way. It's so annoying. It's dragging everything down. But, you know, some hardy Brexiteers.
You're almost getting to the point. I mean, I voted for Brexit, and I've never been happy with the EU. Mm-hmm. But I just think this deal that Theresa May has cobbled together, I mean, it doesn't seem like we're leaving at all from what I'm hearing. Yeah, I mean, obviously I haven't seen the text or anything. I've got no intention of reading all the details of it. But you just get the impression that we're not really leaving the EU, and in many ways we'll still be under control of their courts and stuff. And you just think, well, how is that getting us control of our own country? I mean, just I just feel like Parliament, you know, politicians, government, they've all just let us down so badly. I just think it's unbelievable.
Yeah. And do you know what you're saying there? You said, why should people buy at the moment? That's true. There are a lot of people in the smaller cap space that like to edge on gambling rather than investing. I'm doing a little video on that.
Actually. Yeah.
The difference between investing and gambling, and I say basically be more patient, wait for the news rather than try and guess the news, all that stuff. And at the moment, I think, you know, I'm quite bearish. You know, I am selling into rallies. I'm trying to get some more cash on my account. And I hold a big chunk of cash, almost 50% now of cash, because I'm so uncertain as to what's happening. And I thought, I don't want to gamble away that. I'm happy to sort of sit in the sidelines, let it play out.
Because
I know my cash can't go down. I mean, if the thing does go, like you said, now, if she tries to pass this deal across that's not actually Brexit, and there's a revolt, and it goes the wrong way, and, you know, DUP back out and everyone back out, it could go to a general election, you know? You never know what's going to happen. So there's plenty of risks out there, you know?
Yeah, that's more uncertainty, isn't it?
And
I think that's the key thing. You know, we all know markets don't like uncertainty. And the way it appears to be going, I mean, I struggle to see how that deal can get through Parliament. I struggle to see how that deal can get through the 27 other parliaments around the EU. I mean, that surely is going to be difficult as well. So you can sort, I can see a situation where Article 50 gets extended from March. Because I don't think that any sides, you know, and certainly not Parliament, would let a no deal without some sort of like transition happen. I think there could possibly be a no deal, but with like a transition period to get to that, that would be a very different kettle of fish, I think. But that's, you know, I don't think that's necessarily going to come up. But the point I'm making is I don't think any politician would let a shock no deal happen. So I think the worst possible scenario actually is impossible. It just, no politician would let that go through. on either side.
Do you think it'll just be a case of kicking the can down the road for as long as they can do it?
Yeah, I think you've probably nailed it there. I think that's probably a much more likely thing to happen. Mm. I can't see a general election coming about, because that would need all of the Conservative Party, you know, for a no confidence vote in Parliament and all the rest of it. I can't see that happening, because obviously they're very scared of Corbyn. I can't see the DUP going for that. I don't think a people's vote is even remotely useful, because it's just going to prolong the agony. It'll change nothing. We'll do a people's vote, we'll get exactly the same result, 52-48, whatever it's going to be, and it'll just carry on and on and on. So I don't see how that solves it. I mean, it strikes me the much more possible thing is maybe we just get a new leader of the Conservative Party. But yeah, where does that leave us? You know, I mean, because this is one of the problems. I think there's just a dearth of leadership. Yeah. You know, you're talking about World War One. The common thread is there was no decent leadership. And I think we're in the same situation now. I don't see who can take control of the of government, of parliament, of the Conservative Party, and actually, you know, push against the EU to get the kind of deal that actually would be good for the UK, but still good for the EU. I mean, it seems like Theresa May's just rolled over on everything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, apparently the text has been agreed. At 2 p.m, people listening to this podcast may know by now, of course, if they're listening later on today. Yeah. But what I'm saying, as an investor, that's the problem. Everyone's, you know, it's conjecture, left, right and centre. I mean, no one knows what's going to happen, essentially. You know, if we pull out in a no deal, you know, no one knows what will happen there. We've got trading, something. But I mean, as an investor, what I do know is this, like you said, it's uncertain. And that is not good for the market. Yeah. That's not good for the market. So the only safe place for me to be at the moment is in cash. And that's the way I'm going. And I'm happy to wait and sit in cash for a year. Because in the end of the day, I think if so many companies hold fire on investing or expanding because of the uncertainty, yeah, that will affect the economy real time, you know, and a downturn will happen, you know.
It's got to. I mean, I'm amazed by how resilient the UK economy has been.
Me too.
You know, because it's obvious there's been people, you know, companies haven't been making investments. People haven't been investing. You know, no one's buying a house or buying a car or, well, I bought a car the other day, but that's not a point. But, you know, no one's doing it. And you know, so it's amazing that the economy has held up as well as it has. I mean, the other thing that I always notice, and I've commented quite a bit about this on Twitter and stuff, when you get investors Chronicle every week, yeah, it's always got a page on takeovers, right? Mm-hmm. It's the smallest page I've ever seen. You know, it's got so bad, there's so few deals that they space it out with loads of white text now to try and fill the page. And I've never seen, I think even in the credit crunch, you used to get a full page of takeovers, you know, and I've never seen anything like that yet. Yep. And there are so, if you think about it, with the weak pound and with stocks having fallen so much, from a, you know, outside foreign investors' point of view, there's never been a better time to do takeovers of UK companies. But even then, they're scared to do it or holding back or whatever. So it is just that uncertainty. And that's the point. It's like, even if we had the worst possible deal ever in history and it looked terrible, if we knew that's what we had and we had some certainty, then you'd see the markets rally. That's what I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think
Once you know, even if it's a bad outcome, once you know, you can then plan for it and move forward and all the rest of it. But at the moment, it's just completely up in the air.
Yeah, yeah. And I think even in the US, where growth is good and employment is good, that's worrying, because there are people saying now that they've hit peak, you know. There's not a lot, they're like 4% or just below 4% unemployment. There's not a lot further you can go. And so what happens is then, and it's happened over here. What happens is that you have to push up wages, you know, that to encourage people to move, they have to increase wages. That affects inflation. That then has to be clamped down by the Fed or by the Bank of England, and you get a slowing market, you know. And so either way you turn at the moment, I just think there's not a lot of positive. Honestly, a big correction.
throw in the Trump factor and you know, the trade wars and all the rest of it, and there's so many reasons to just be unsure, aren't there?
Well, exactly, and this goes back to what you just said there. Considering all that, I find it's amazing how resilient the markets are. You know, we have seen corrections, maybe a shaky, wobbly bit now showing the worries. but I just think it hasn't fallen because there's so much uncertainty out there. I don't think it's priced in, really.
Yeah, but then you sort of, you know, when you think about it, 2018 has been a difficult year almost from the off. You know, we had little brief rallies in the market in general, but really the trend has been down all through 2018. So there's definitely a situation where you look at a lot of stocks now and you sort of think, well, if we didn't have all this uncertainty around, these would be bloody good buys, you know?
Yeah.
I'm seeing that a lot. I'm looking at stocks and thinking, well, actually, that looks very cheap. But you just think, yeah, it is very cheap. But it's probably going to be a lot cheaper. So why would I rush to buy it?
That's it. I mean, saying that, I mean, you mentioned last time you came on, you mentioned Vodafone, didn't you? You're not into it, but that's a nice little bounce, isn't it?
Well, you say that. It had a bounce yesterday. It jumped 7% yesterday on the results, you know, because it looks like the dividend is safe, or at least for the time being. But I haven't moved on it yet because, you know, it's still in a downtrend channel.
Yeah.
And until I see it break out of that channel, I'm not even remotely interested in buying it. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I have done, apart from putting the shorts on my S&P 500, I actually sold, what's it called? Framlington? Hang on, no. Sorry, it's Henderson Global Technology, yeah? Unit Trust.
Yeah.
I sold that yesterday because I had that outside of my ISA. Yeah, just a bit like what you were talking about yesterday. So I freed up cash from that. But what I will do is at some point today, I'm going to buy a little bit, but I'm going to buy less than I had of the Henderson Technology. I'm going to buy PCT, Polar Capital Technology Trust, because that's effectively the same thing, but one's as an investment trust, and I can have that within my ISA. Because I've got some cash in my ISA that I can use to do that. And it effectively frees up cash outside of my ISA, which is more useful to me. That's the only sort of... So I'm just doing little bits of tinkering here and there, really. It's more of an admin thing than a fundamental change, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I still want to have exposure to technology. Because the problem is, it's like as much as I think chances are the NASDAQ will fall further, you just don't know, do you? You know, it could be an amazing rally next week. So I don't want to sort of completely move out of technology. I still think it's a great area for the long term to me have a position in. But I just don't want to go too heavily into it, obviously.
Yeah, well, I thought it was very odd. When you see the biggest company in the world, which is pretty much, you know, on the floated world, Apple, when they say they're not going to report anymore the sales of their iPhones and all that stuff, you think, why are they doing that? You've got to question why they do that.
Yeah, you're hiding.
And then you had that company that supplies Apple, apparently, supplies all the tech for the face recognition, have been told that they're going to be supplying less units to them. And you're thinking, hang on, that's a bit worrying. And of course, because they're so big and they're leading the field, and you think, well, hang on, this is a bit of a worrying sort of signal or sign here. So, but is it anyway at the moment? Is it just a case of you think, be patient, wait it out, or is there anything now you think, well, that's a screaming buy in my eyes, I can't, you know.
Well, you know, I'm not really seeing much, right? Except, as you said, for short-term trades. Yeah, I'm sure there are still short-term trades out there for people who are, you know, who are talented enough to do it and have got the time to do it and the interest to do it. But I think from an investment point of view, it's very hard to get excited about anything at the moment. There's just no need to. You know, just wait a little bit, let things calm down, and then you can buy, you know.
Yeah.
It just, I mean, I, you know, as you know, I'm a great believer in the sort of technical side, you know, the charting side as well.
Yeah.
And the charts are incredible because you've got the US charts, like the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, yeah, where they sort of dropped in October. They rallied up a bit to around their 50 and 200-day moving averages, and now they're dropping down again. And it looks like we're heading to 50/200-day moving average bearish crosses, you know, death crosses. If we get those crosses, that can imply weeks and months of weakness in the US. So the US looks pretty weak to me, which is part of the reason I've shorted the S&P 500. And then I look at the UK markets, and we had the sort of, you know, the drop down off the peak and stuff on the FTSE 100. And then we seem to be in a bit of a range between 6,850 at the bottom and 7,200 at the top. And we're sort of wiggling in that range. I think if that range breaks down, so we go below 6850, I think we could see 6.6, 6.5, that kind of level. But by that point, it's getting pretty cheap, I think.
Saying that, we all know the stock market sort of overreacts. So if there is any signals of a recession or bear market, then there's a big sell-off. But that's partly what I mean. I'm not, like I said, time in the market is always a thing. But I mean, I just want cash for a decent, if it's a decent correction or sell-off, I want to have a decent amount of cash,
Yeah, so you're protected. I mean, like I said, I take the approach that I like to keep my portfolio intact, but I hedge. I try and short indexes, and I'm about 15% hedged now, short to the tune of 15% of my portfolio. I'll look at the charts tonight, and if they look weak, I might add a little bit more. We'll see how it plays out. Because that's a great thing with the FTSE 100 is having that range, 6850 to 7.2, in a way, it tells you what to do. Because if it breaks below 6850, we're probably going to go a lot lower. If it goes above 7.2, then actually things are looking good again. So that range tells us a lot, really. And if you look at the FTSE 250, you look at the small caps, you look at the AIM All Share, they're all doing the same. They've all got this little range. So that really tells us what to do. So it's almost like, don't think about it too hard. Just let the chart tell you what's going to happen. That's what I'm looking at it.
Yeah. And at the moment, I mean, let's talk about the probably the worst performing stock in yours and my portfolio. I've cut massively.
I know the one.
Go on, yeah, utility-wise. I mean, Jeff Thompson, the founder and CEO, sold out 6% of the company in 2 days, And people are thinking, hang on, he knows something. What's going on here? But of course, he was the sort of ousted CEO chairman because, part of the problem, he was part of the problem, wasn't he,
Oh, absolutely, yeah. He had no control whatsoever. And I mean, it's funny because with all the collapse in UTW in the last few days, I've looked at the last RNS and read it through really carefully.
Me too.
And there isn't really anything particularly bad in there. You read it through and actually it's all about getting proper controls and doing things properly. What Brendan Flattery and the new CFO and whatever have been doing, and so you sort of think, well, based on the information we actually know in the market rather than the speculation and the rumor and all the rest of it, there's nothing particularly changed from when that trading update came out. Yeah. So it's very strange. The other obvious factor with that one is Neil Woodford has got he's got a massive position in it.
I checked that yesterday as well. Still there. Yeah.
It's still there, yeah. And there's been a lot of damage done to a lot of stocks. Like I hold Hostelworld, HSW, yeah? It just goes down every day. Just goes down and down and down. And you just think, how is that possible? And, talk to ones that look cheap. I mean, you just look at it and you just think, that's madness. But apparently, Neil Woodford had a lot of it and he's selling. Because what's happening is, because he runs a unit trust and it's such a big unit trust and so many retail investors have put money into it, because it's gone badly wrong and because of Brexit worries and everything, people are selling their unit trust positions. Now, the problem that creates for Neil Woodford is he has to have cash to meet the redemptions. People want to take their money out of the fund.
Yeah.
So he's being forced to sell positions to free up cash to pay those redemptions. And that's putting a lot of pressure on things like Hostelworld and whatever. Now, I wonder if that's a factor of you at UTW as well, although he doesn't seem to be cutting his holding in that one. So
I did check that, and whatever happens when a stock takes a hammer and you're holding it, I do exactly the same as you did there, and I saw many other people do. You check back on the last couple of RNSs and thinking, let's re-examine this. Have I got this completely wrong? Yeah. Now the only thing I'm worried about, I did even look back at their traditional sort of margins on a conservative basis, because their margins, net margins, are around about 25%. So I thought, well, let's take 20%. They say they're going to turn over 54 million. So that's That's around about, say, just over $10 million in net profit. Their debt is around about $17 million, and so they can cover that.
By about $1 million, didn't it? Yeah, in the last.
They got no problems covering that off within 2 years if they had. Completely. So,
well, it's a banking facility for $25 million.
I'm worried about the debt.
The banking facility. So it's.
Trouble is now we're at a level where look at the market cap is like 4.25 million. This is crazy considering they'd be turning over some 60 million. As long as they're making sort of money and they can chip away at the debt, there's no problem. It's when you're loss making and you've got big debt. That's the issue.
When you're burning the money.
But I'm still thinking, have I got it wrong? Have I got it wrong here? Because there's something going on. And I just think somebody's selling. I know Jeff was selling it crazy. Is someone else selling it crazy? Or is it just worry begets selling, you know?
I think there's a lot of that. I suspect. I mean, it's pretty obvious with the moves it's had in the last few days that it's incredibly illiquid. You know, there is a shortage of buyers and a shortage of sellers. Yeah, well, probably more sellers than buyers. But because of those shortages, you get these extreme moves. And if you look, as you say, the amazing thing is nothing's come out from the company. There's been all these big falls. And they haven't made any kind of statement, which is in itself is strange, isn't it? Most companies put out, statement regarding recent share price movement, and they sort of say, "Oh yeah, we're trading okay, and everything's fine," or whatever, And they haven't even put that out. But then, since Brendan Flattery came in, and since with the problems, they've not been communicating with the market at all. They've never committed any. There's always been these long periods of silence. So I have no idea what's going to happen.
I've contacted the PR twice and, trying to find... No communication with me whatsoever. And it's a lady who I communicate through other stocks with. And on this stock, she's tending to ignore me. Black, like, what's going on?
Black box, isn't it? It's weird. Funny, talking about the debt and stuff, there's another way of looking, the valuation side of things. Take the idea of an enterprise value.
Yeah.
So you've got, what is it, 17 million debt, 4 million of market cap. Yeah. You add the two together, you get 20. So you're sort of talking 21 million enterprise value, and, it could be doing 50-odd million of revenue. But this, the problem in it, it's like you say, look back at what the gross margins were before. The big problem with UTW is we don't know, we can't trust those old figures because of the revenue recognition issues and the profit issues and all the rest of it. We've got nothing real to go on, have we? It's such a strange situation. So reliant really on the company telling us something. We need the company to come out and say, yeah, we're trading great, or the company say, well, actually, we've got more problems, but we need something, and at the moment, it's just completely silent.
Yeah, I just think that if they come out and say it's all fine, we turn over, I think it'll just fly. Otherwise,
good news. Yeah,
it's one of those situations where it's boom or bust. That's it. It's either going to go crazy or it's going to go through the floor. And it's not for widows and orphans. Definitely, it's a scary stock because it's just. If you look at the chart, literally within the last year and a half, it was up £2. Now it's what was the price now at the moment? It's now down to 5p, 5.5p. It's ridiculous, Anyway,
it's become a penny stock.
Finally, on your personal strategy, are you literally just a buy and hold here?
With UTW, I really didn't expect it to get that bad. I thought once Brendan Flattery had come in and they'd sort of got a grip on things, we would see the situation improve. But it just hasn't, has it? I think from the information we've had from the company, from the trading statements, things have improved. But that just hasn't been reflected in the share price. Now, whether that's because someone else knows something, which is very possible, or whether the market's just got it completely wrong. Bearing in mind what we've had in October and what's going on with the uncertainty, it could just be a lot of people panicking. And you look on the bulletin boards and it's hilarious because it's all just complete speculation and nonsense, So who knows what's going on? And I really didn't expect it to get that bad. The fortunate thing for me is I only ever put something like 1.5 or 2% of my portfolio in it, so it doesn't cause that much damage to me in the big picture. But I'm frustrated by it because I really thought it would do better. But it's going to happen sometimes. It's like either you use, either you're a buy and hold investor, but you use stop losses. Or you're a buy and hold investor, and you've got to accept that if you buy small AIM companies, you will get odd problems like this. Yeah. I mean, the other one I've been caught by, and I just, oh, this is just unbelievable, is Cake. You know, Patisserie Valerie. I was in Cake. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's turned out to be a fraud. And nobody knew. Nobody. I saw no one mention anything about that being a fraud before it went just suddenly pop.
Yeah. Well, the lesson here is, like you say, is never overexpose. I mean, and I always say this. I said, you know, you can't control the market or the price or the company. What you can control is your exposure to it. And so, you know, you can always. I'm trying to say do this all the time. I've been a bit ambitious on certain stocks. I've let my imagination get carried away, and I've gone a bit too big. But you can always go in very small, wait for confirmation that the story's...
Build up.
Because there's always down days, there's always corrections where you can add a bit more if the story's playing out well. But like you say, the only protection we have is the exposure to our stock market, you know, our risk, and that's it. And so that's like you say, you sit and talk about it. Do you know what I always find out? I mean, I always know when people are overexposed on Twitter because they're ramping their stocks really aggressively. They get very sensitive.
It's the same stock over and over again.
Yeah, but if they get very defensive on something, when someone questions something about the company, and literally it's not a de-ramp, it's not someone trying to be negative on purpose. It's someone asking a question fundamentally about the company, and they get really defensive. You know they're overexposed.
Yeah, that's what it's telling you, isn't it? That's so true.
If you can't have an objective conversation, then you're overexposed, you know?
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, if you can't have a calm conversation about one of your stocks, then you'll probably be very overexposed. Exactly. that's a really good way of looking at it. Yeah. The other thing that has definitely helped me through this year and through October, particularly through October, was that I have a mix of stocks. And I know you do to an extent.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people will only buy small cap stocks, or they'll only buy AIM stocks, they only buy certain sectors of the market. I buy right across. You know, I'll buy small little AIM stuff. I'll also have small caps. I'll have FTSE 250s. I'll have FTSE 100s. You know, and I have a big mix of everything. That's really helped me through these problems. You know, whereas some of my stocks have been dropping like mental amounts, like 6-8% a day. Some of my sort of like, you know, small caps and that have had some real hefty drops in October. The FTSE 100 stuff, you know, a bad day for a FTSE 100 company is a 2% drop. You know, it just doesn't move in the same way. And it just gives you much more balance in your portfolio. I mean, obviously the downside is when times are good, you don't make as much money. For me personally, I would trade off that gain in the good time.
Yeah, the risk, the reward.
I sleep in the bad time because I hate, you know, the kind of thing that was going on. I just hate that. It's not for me. I just don't like it at all. You know, so I would rather, you know, the trade off of having a big diversified portfolio and using hedges to try and take out some of the market risk. But stay invested, sleep at night, not have to worry about it. You know, I can be chatting on the phone, you know, I'm not worried about what's going on in the markets. It's whatever, you know, it'll do whatever it does. And I, you know, if I don't look all day today, it won't worry me. I'll come and look at it tonight. I'll make any decisions I need to make tonight. But I'm just not going to be getting worried about it. And it's what you said earlier. It's like, if you're getting worried and getting stressed and whatever, you're overexposed. Doing something wrong if you're getting stressed and panicking and selling your stock in a panic right at the bottom after it's fallen 40%. I mean, it's just, what's the point of doing that? You shouldn't be selling then, you should be buying. Exactly. I've seen so much of that going on. I mean, I saw that back in October. You know, it's like, if you wanted to sell stocks, you had so much warning, you know, January through the summer, you've had plenty of chances to sell. Now we get in October, the markets start tanking, all the stocks are going down, and everyone starts selling.
And then, like,
too late now, guys. You should have been selling back then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I said recently on the weekend podcast, I did say about my stocks towards the end of September, probably I was the highest I've ever been in my portfolio value. Mm. And I did start selling, but not enough, I think. And on a simplified version, when your stock, because you think it's that psychological problem that you have to counterintuitively flip your mindset, because when your stocks are at high, you know, you keep thinking they're going to go higher. So that's when you need to sell, really. But and then when your stocks are low, you think they go lower, so you start selling then. But no, you should flip it round,
Yeah, it's so hard to do. I mean, the guy that did it, incredible, and he's worth watching for him on Twitter, yeah? Do you know Cockney Rebel? He's a legend, yeah?
Yeah.
At Rebel HQ. He tweets and that, you know. And he tweeted out, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago or something, he said, I pretty much sold all of my portfolio. I think he'd gone down to about, he just had, say, 15 or 10% left in stocks. He'd sold everything else. Yeah. And at the time, I thought, bloody hell, that's a bit of a move, you know, because I know he's a bit of a legend in the investing game. He knows what he's doing. He's very good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
And I looked off, bloody hell, I thought, that's incredible that he's done that, you know. But you look at it now, he's been absolutely spot on.
Yeah.
And not only that, he said the other day, he's starting to tentatively buy things, you know, very slowly, just buying little bits, and he's not committing much. He's taking his time, but he's starting to buy things again. So I thought that was interesting. He's certainly a guy who's worth watching.
Yeah. Well, I should have sold more, I think, than now. But I mean, do you know what? I'll end on a good note here. Apparently, I'm just reading this article. It's from last year. But,
it's all good.
Yes, it's all good, yeah. But apparently, there's an 83% chance that the Santa Rally happens. And so they're saying that the FTSE has risen 83.3% of the time in December. Now, I've seen people on Twitter saying this a lot. When Santa Rally started, it doesn't happen to the last week of December. So it can be a very aggressive sort of rally, but it's not until the last week. You know, but I think the sell-off now gives that chance an even greater probability of happening. You know, I think it will happen.
I think it does. I mean, every big sell-off always results in a bounce of some sort. I mean, I think last year, I mean, I watch it like a hawk, you know, because I did pretty well out of it. Last couple of years, I've played the Santa Rally and, you know, added a few percent to my portfolio. So last year, I think it started around the 17th of December, something like that. So I just watched the charts avidly as we get into December, the first few days of December. And I'm looking, when do I go long, you know? And like you said, you can build the position so you can put a bit of a long spread bet on. And then as it starts to go, you put more on, you know. And as you, I think last year, like I said, it was like 17th, 18th or something, and it ran right through to the start of January. I got a feeling I closed mine a little bit early. I could have had a little bit more if I'd have let it run a little bit more. But it's usually a great way of making money, and it just gives you a bit of a fillip at the end of the year, especially I think we're going to need it this year.
Exactly. marvellous stuff. Thanks for that, Pete, and we'll speak soon, fella.
That's great to speak to you, mate. Cheers. Bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Alpha Growth, ALGW. At 4, ARC Minerals, ARCM. At 3, FlyB Group, FLYB. So, okay, they're up for sale, apparently. So, well, there we go. If you've got to spare a couple of quid. At 2, Core Potash. I say Potash. That's KP2. And number one most followed company is OilX, O-E-X. Okay. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Jersey Oil and Gas, directorate changes. At 4, Anglo-African Oil and Gas, result of general meeting. At 3, EVR Holdings, Melody VR to feature in Oculus marketing campaign. At 2, ARC Minerals, high-grade cobalt drill results from shallow oxide. And number one, most liked RNS, came from Asia Met Resources. Asia Met initiates additional BKM feasibility works. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciate us. By the way, I'm releasing a new video hopefully today, so check it out. Just do a search on YouTube, Justin Waite Investing, and you get it. Or go to my Twitter sort of page there, which is at SharePickers, and you get it there. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.